A Hero's Journey is, by its nature, a podcast filled with spoilers. We recommend reading the book beforehand and then diving into the episode, but proceed at your own risk.
Hi, and welcome to A Hero's Journey, a literary podcast. I'm your host and judge, Jack, and I'm here with my dauntless defiance.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
Each week, we look at a different book through Joseph Campbell's monomyth.
This week, we're reading Skyward by Brandon Sanderson, a novel that takes place outside of his normal Cosmere universe, if you're familiar with that. This book follows Spin, who is starts as a young girl at the very beginning in the prologue at 7 years old, who lives on a planet in a faraway galaxy unfamiliar to us, where humans live underground, hiding out from the Krell, an alien race that constantly attacks the human race to not allow them to progress further after her people had crash-landed a spaceship there many generations ago. Her father, at the very beginning of the book, goes off, who is a pilot, goes off to fight the Krell and ends up dying, and not only dying in the battle, but also being labeled a coward by the society after they've decided to move on to the surface after beating the Krell. Her family gets relegated to abject poverty, and the story fast forwards 10 years to where she's just at the end of her high school and about to take the entry exam to the flight academy because she too wants to be a pilot like her father and fight against the aliens. We follow her struggles being denied the flight academy initially, but then gaining entrance through a loophole, learning that while she's allowed to enter the academy, she's not exactly allowed full privileges of it and must sleep out in the desert. She discovers an ancient ship, which she repairs with great technology. She increases her pilotage skills and eventually learns quite a bit about not only being a pilot, but also being a friend and how to save her people.
Light lance swinging around our caves, we come to our departure. In a week that I'm very interested in as somebody who is not a pilot, getting to listen to a pilot talk about this book.
Our adventure this week is following Spin in her journey to become a pilot, as well as to repair her family's name. Like we mentioned in the synopsis, her father was treated as the coward, and she's been branded daughter for most of her life. And while she's done her best to kind of live underneath that scrutiny, it still takes a toll on her in many significant and emotional ways. For our call to adventure, we have her overwhelming urge from a young age to become a pilot like her father, even in the scene that we get with her father at the beginning of the story. She has an urge to go out amongst the stars and be a pilot. It's even a little funny slash cute and weird that the little seven-year-old wants to bring death to her enemies, but she's a very vocal and detailed young child in her desire both to be a pilot and to see vast bloodshed, so... and hopefully she gets slightly disillusioned with this as the story progresses. For our refusal of the call, we have her failing the test to enter into the academy. And while this test itself is rigged against her, so while she views this as very unfair, she doesn't know how to handle it, really. She should leave, but she's too defiant to do that, so... She kind of takes this test and understanding that she's going to fail and refuses to leave the room where the test takes place in a little bit of petulance, but it actually ends up paying off for her because this is when she meets her mentor, who is Cobb, her father's wingmate from back in the day. On multiple occasions, he provides her with information, he provides her with training, he provides her with the opportunity to even enter into the flight school by saying that while the Admiral has say over a lot of aspects of the flight school and of the Air Force or the DDF, that she can't control that's into his training classes and that she would be allowed to train at his school. At her crossing the threshold, her entering into the DDF flight school above ground in Alta, she meets several of her classmates who will be her flight squad, She learns about the fact that she's going to be denied a lot of the comforts, such as the mess hall or the dormitory, and that she won't be allowed to use the facilities that are maintained by the DDF. So she learns a lot of good things about entering into school, and then a lot of things are going to prove to be hardships for her. And then for the Belly of the Whale, we have the meeting with MBOT, who is the decommissioned aircraft. Well, I shouldn't necessarily decommission, which is the wrecked aircraft that she finds when she's looking for a hidey hole to sleep in after she's been essentially denied the dormitories of the flight school. So she finds this ship that's old and ripped apart and is unlike anything she's ever seen before. The designs aren't something she's familiar with from her studies. She manages to steal a power source from one of her classmates' cars and uses that to power up the ship just long enough for the AI to kind of kick in. And it has its own personality and says that it should be called MBOT. It's a ship whose memories are erased after its accident. It doesn't know where it's from or much of why it's there, but it does.
But it only knows one thing, that it must find fungus.
It must find fungi, and that proves to be a very important plot point and story device for the story moving forward.
All right, Zach, I think our journey for Spin here is a great one. This is, I think, what she sets out to do from the beginning, and even at the end, after the story kind of changes and morphs and we get more information, it still fits really well. So I know this is something you always like to just at least mention, that our journey starts out differently than it ends. But in this case, I think you found a good journey that continues all the way through. For our call to adventure, I guess this is okay, having that overwhelming urge to be a pilot. But what do you think about her father dying and then that being broadcasted out to the city that he's a coward and betrayed everybody? Or not betrayed everybody, but that he's a coward.
I mean, I knew he was dying the moment she went back down into the cave, but when the last bit goes, my father was branded a coward for fleeing at the battle was won, and my father was branded a coward, was a pretty good twist.
Yeah. I'm expecting it either, but I don't know. I think if she hadn't already had that kind of pilot urge that we learn is, I guess, probably somewhat genetic within her, she would have found a different avenue to pursue this redemption of her family's name. And so I think you have to take the two hand in hand.
I mean, she wouldn't have a family name to redeem if her father wasn't branded a coward and she believed it incorrect.
Yeah, but she could have also gone into like a completely different field. But we know that that's kind of maybe a biological. I just find it really weird when people go off and do like the same things that their parents did.
I mean, that's not genetics. That's just lots of people want to. Your parents are your role models, and lots of people end up doing that. Of people do what their parents did.
My dad's a pilot.
I always forget that your dad was a pilot. I always think of your grandfather as the pilot.
My grandfather was also a pilot, and also my dad's brother was a pilot.
Well, you're from a family of pilots. Alex is not from a family of doctors. I'm from a family of lawyers, but I am not a lawyer.
Anyway,
going on to our refusal of the call there, I don't think failing the test is really a refusal at all. She sits there. She doesn't accept or like just she doesn't leave saying, oh, I failed the test, I'll never be a pilot. She sits there and she does another person's test. She sits there for hours.
She's kind of pouting. She's not doing it to show them up. She's just doing it more for herself, like because she's lost.
She has two different... I mean, Spencer Spin is a very persistent character, but she has her two moments of refusal-ish melancholy. First, before the test, when she goes and wanders the cave and she barely makes it back on time because she's convinced that maybe she really... the game is rigged against her. And then after she becomes convinced that she... Right, that... That is the test. If she shows up, everything will be fine. She gets the test. It's impossible for her. She throws her last gambit of walking up with her father's wings. And while ultimately you're right, she does, that persistence of staying there and taking the test is what gets her into school. She isn't doing it for that reason. Like, she's convinced that her life is over and she's just not able to move on from that, but she is still in her rejection spiral.
I mean, I guess. I feel like a refusing this would have been not doing her test or leaving after doing the test. And then the pilot, the giving the wingsing actually worked for Cobb somehow. Like, that would have been a better refusal. And then Cobb coming in as the mentor. Although I do think Cobb is a good mentor. I think he provides a lot of the mentory feeling that we want from a book. Right? He helps her get into the flight school. He helps her learn about flight school, sprinkles in information, but he's not an overbearing presence.
So. Reminded me a little bit of Mars from Red Rising.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison.
You know, Alex, looking back at the steps for it, and I do unfortunately think I have to agree with you on the refusal. As much as I like this as a working in of the concepts that we associate with the refusal, it is really, much like our Temptress, it's got a lot to do with the character's mindset. And you are correct that Spin, even in her like depression around the test, doesn't give in to despair or say, I don't want this anymore. She's still focused on wanting it and, in fact, is incapable of moving on.
Going on to our... I think that this... I mean, it's supposed to represent the crossing the threshold, but I don't think it really does, because when Spin enters flight school, what is she? She's an outcast. Outcast from the group. Just like she was before. She's literally going back to live on her own in caves. Like, that's what she was doing before, hunting rats, exactly what she was doing before. The only thing different is now her school is a school that she actually enjoys.
That's not the only difference. The difference is now that she has, at least in the beginning portions of the journey, has people who don't associate her with being the daughter of a coward. She says as much at the beginning. Yes, that becomes not true anymore, a little bit ways in, but I think it's several months or maybe a month or two before they actually, the flight leader.
Well, flight school is only 4 months. It's like 2 weeks because everything in this book is on a compressed timeline. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a hard time figuring out the full.
It feels like it's like a year of time, but it's really only a few four months or okay. Whatever. They say it at the beginning, but Alex, I think the other thing for me is that if perhaps she really did take the elevator every day and go home and continue living a life similar to the one that she was living before, except that school is now flight school, I might agree with you. But by going and living in that cave and working on MBOT and being totally devoted to flight school, she does, it might not be the world that the identical world and experience to all of her flight mates, wingmates, but it is definitely a new world for her. She's severed from her family by choice, ultimately, but she's living on the surface.
Okay, so it's more that she's living on the surface and now with her family. That's different than
like the flight school? Yeah, right. It's with, okay. I mean, flight school is a part of it, but it is a complete alteration to her old life.
Yeah, she only goes down below ground, I think, a couple times to retrieve her hidey holes and then to get Rig involved.
Okay.
And he was one of her flightmates originally, so he gets a pass into the new life.
All right, I guess that is reasonable then. Belly of the Whale, though. How does meeting MBOT not let her turn back from trying to repair her family's name? MBOT doesn't even know who that guy is. He can't fly. He can't help her with this at the beginning. He's just a little shippy, a little cool AI ship.
And like, you could argue that it'd be like, oh, she's now committing a crime, except that, as we know, she's been doing that her entire fucking life and hates the government while at the same time serving it.
I think it's less to do with those aspects and more to do with the fact that if we look at her character, she understandably was not necessarily ready and wasn't sure what her future would look like after being denied. She would have had to have gone on living, right? But now, if she gives up now, all she's going to be giving up is the flight school portion, and her life is going to become obsessively revolved around MBOT.
I think perhaps the better belly of the whale, even if in reality, once she enters flight school, she's in a true sense of danger, might be the first time her crewmates are shot down.
Yeah. It's who's first? Mark the Marine?
Yeah.
It's girl who doesn't speak English very well, right?
Yeah.
And where do you stand on death of her wingmates?
I personally think death of the wingmates makes more sense. It gives us a real sense of danger in this world. And again, this would be an opportunity for her to turn back. You know,
someone
Raj does. Raj does. He says, "Oh, I can't do this anymore." So I think
Raj turned back after. Raj turns back after day one, I thought.
Yeah, when. Oh,
nobody
yeah,
does on day one. After day. Somebody does.
The religious girl can't almost take it anymore. After Hurl dies.
Yeah, Hurl dies, and then is it Dragon?
Quirk,
then. Dragon's parents pull him out after the first death?
Take him out after he almost crashes. I guess what it comes down to me, the belly of the whale. Do you want me to say anything about this?
No, I think we're all in agreement here.
That it passes, just not at the point.
Just not with the spot. Just not with the existence of M-Bot. You could have been like stealing the power cell from Jorg's car.
No, I needed to put the meaning of M-Bot.
The meaning of M-Bot is life.
I needed M-Bot.
You've got to measure higher power. And that is going to close us out on our departure with just that refusal of Lacall missing, putting Spin off to a strong start as a headstrong, guns blazing hero, just like her ancestors. Flying in our mockpit, or really getting the sensation of flying in our mockpit, we begin our road of trials.
I have to say, if our simulators were nearly that cool, I'd spend
you
a
wouldn't
lot
fly fucking plane.
Yeah, it would be like the simulators we have fucking suck. All right. I mean, there's still like $200,000 simulators, but that's not the point. So for our road of trials, Spin undergoes a couple different aspects of her personality throughout the story. We have her journey to repair M-Bot that she does with Rig, which requires her to not only be kind of crafty, but also be on the lookout for, essentially, it's kind of like a bunch of little fetch quests put in the story to get the different parts and pieces while still maintaining M-Bot to be a secret. And it's kind of as she, not literally, but as M-Bot kind of progresses in his repairs, he also progresses the story and also in usefulness to her. We also see Spin actively increasing her pilotage skills. She had this, and I think I did a little bit when I was reading the story, kind of expected her to take to flying naturally. Mm-hmm. And while by the end of the story, she definitely is a very good pilot, only helped even furthermore by some of her biological makeup. It's definitely not an easy journey for her, and she finds herself struggling to increase her pilot skills, especially in the mock. And then we also finally have this sort of social political game that's being played in the background that I think Spin doesn't wish she had any part in, but simply because the nature of her family's legacy, as well as this mysterious defect, we find her being used as both a pawn and bearing the brunt of this kind of social economic dispute that she is doing her best to disabuse people of. You know, there's a conversation she has with Cobb at one point about the defect where he says, you know, the best way for you to prove them all wrong is to become the best pilot you can be and make them feel bad for ever doubting you. And so throughout each of these steps, she's increasing not only her skill level, but kind of becoming the character that she needs to be in order to undergo the trials the whole story provide her with. The emotional turmoils of losing her teammates that we talked about in the belly of the whale, as well as the fact that she's not been a very well-liked person throughout her childhood. And so I think that social political into the fact that at one point in the story, she's becoming genuine friends with her crewmates, which I think is important for her. Gives her kind of the willpower to keep moving forward. For our meeting with the higher power, I've chosen M'Bot. M'Bot provides, as far as the power skill goes, while also, I think, uniquely needing things from Spin. His person is very human, more so than I think most AIs that we've that at least I've seen in popular media. It's very refreshing. And the fact that he provides her with not only a safe place to hang her head, base of operations, not only a little bit of a drive and a need to be doing things beyond the flight school, but he is able to integrate into the technology of the society and provide her with further insight to battles and communications. He's a hologram projector for her. He's pretty much a catch-all for things that Spin needs throughout the story. So I think that's pretty cool. The Temptress is eventually, she gets a hologram recording of her father, the Battle of Alta, where her father is deemed the coward, and she watches it back through M'Bot and learns that she isn't exactly what society has been fed. It does not look good for her father. He escapes up into the atmosphere, up into space, and several minutes later comes back down, guns blazing, and several of the other crew members. And so she has an understandably very hard time with the idea that her father was a coward her whole life. And now she comes to find that not only was he a coward, but he was a grand betrayer. And that really wrecks her emotionally. And there's kind of a temptation there to believe, well, if the most important person in my life was what everyone says he is, does that mean that I always was what everybody says I was? And that's a very hard thing for her to recover from. Eventually she does, especially after conversations with friends and family. For Atonement with the Creator, quite a bit of story progresses. She manages to get downed in a fight, and rather than going down with the ship, so to speak, she ejects herself and saves herself off of the aircraft, which gets her kicked out of the flight school. She is then moping around, and when everybody else graduates, the few remaining members of their fleet get inducted into the full DDF, and then they go and are going to have a huge battle with the Krell that are invading. So the rest of the have to fight a big Krell invasion over what is bound to be some very valuable salvage that they could use to bolster their fleet numbers. But it's all proved to be a grand distraction, and that the Krell are actually coming after Alta with one of their nuclear-esque devices.
And so, important to note, Spin has been kicked off the force at this point.
Yeah, he said that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I wasn't sure.
That's okay. And so while Spin is kind of moping around with her friends, listening to the battle on the radio, not in their ships, just at a rest, that there's another group of Krell that are coming straight for Alta, and they manage to requisition some aircraft from one of the pilot's rich parents who have their own little private fleet.
Requisition's a nice word.
But can you steal from yourself? Because they're his. Anyway.
They're not his.
They're his.
Dad's car when you're in high school. It's pretty much the same thing. Didn't everybody steal their dad's plane when they were in high school?
Especially during the middle of an emergency where they're trying to use that as their evacuation method. I often stole my parents' cars.
Good. It'd be like if a hurricane was coming and you took your parents' car.
To go fight the hurricane.
To go fight the hurricane. And Spin goes and pretty much takes a ship that is out of commission due to the fact it doesn't have any shielding and is barely on its last leg. But she takes that out to go fight the incoming bombers, downed by the Krell aircraft, only to be rescued by Cobb, who is in M'Bot. And then inside M'Bot, she goes and coordinates the defenses of the last remaining ships and is able to cut free the bomb from the bomber with the aid of Quirk, who's an ace shot. She then uses her lash whip to bring the nuclear device up into the atmosphere and away from Alta. And in doing so, not only the people of Alta, but as well as the subterranean city of Indigenous? I can really...
Igneous.
Igneous. That's even more clever.
Like the rock.
Yeah. In all of that information dump for you there, her atonement to creators, her first comms with Admiral Ironside when she first gets the ship, Ironside is pretty much resigned to her world and that all hopes of humanity are lost, and then Spin comes blasting out onto the radar, and even though Admiral Ironsides has been against her this whole time, there's this realization that this defective is their last chance at being saved, which is a pretty cool moment, and it certainly goes a long way towards redeeming. I think even had she failed, even though there wouldn't have been much society left, redeemed her family in lots of people's eyes. And then we move into our apotheosis, where the cytonic hyperdrives is one of the systems that M-Bot has been talking about throughout the story as being inactive in his systems list. And it's only when she is piloting him at full capacity and she kind of opens herself up to her defect that the cytonic hyperdrive becomes active, because she was the missing piece all along, and her defective nature is what allows that to activate. And so they are able to hyperjump away from the scene of the nuclear explosion before it blows them up, as they would have been the only casualty. So not only has she stopped the bomb from destroying all of humankind, but she's also stopped it from destroying herself. So she has that nice apotheosis realization, and then immediately the ultimate boon of saving.
So starting off on our road trials here, I think these are pretty good. I really like the increase in the pilot skills, because you said, when I first read the book, and when you first read the book, and when anyone first reads the book, I think they're going to assume that Spin is just going to be a natural pilot. And I mean, she's good, but she's not, like, amazing, though not the best pilot as soon as she picks it up. They talk about how Jorgen is better, and he's still, I think, a better technical pilot even at the end.
No.
He's not. He is.
Technical pilot.
He's probably, like, if he had the ability, he would probably be better. But I think with her bionic or her biological advantages, she's the better pilot.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. For these other trials, I mean, repairing the ship, really getting to know M-Bot, I think, is a kind of better trial for that. And I like it.
Yeah, I mean, she has to kind of figure out how to work with M-Bot, right? Because he can be somewhat
obstinate.
Obstinate for an AI who can't. Which is funny because that's the definition of AI, right? But...
yeah, and I also like the navigating the social political situation. Like you see her developing her friendships with her classmates, and them starting to realize that, hey, she's not a coward, she's not this insane person, and her becoming friends with some of the other pilots too during their short interactions with the scouts. We see that, like, you can tell she's developing a relationship with some of the pilots and is getting just a little bit more respect.
I really like that show-offy scene.
Only thing against this is M-Bot's part of the crew of just Spin and M-Bot. That's the crew.
There's Rig.
Yeah, I guess Rig a little bit too, but he seems to be doing most of his work on M-Bot when Spin is not there and not interacting with her as much, which is a little weird, but
I kind of expected a Rig Spin ship.
No, it's clearly Jorgen from the moment he walks in the room.
No, because then they try to distract us with blue haired.
Well, yeah, but it's so clearly, like, not that made me immediately put him as person that's going to die, because Jorgen is clearly the love interest. It is fair, I think, to argue that M-Bot is part of the crew. The fact that he abandons her and comes back, though, does leave me thinking that he might still fit the higher power, because he comes in for that save the day moment with his extra abilities.
Okay, so he's like part of the crew, and then at the last second, after he abandons them, he comes back as a higher power?
Yeah. I think he rejoins the crew probably for book 2. Not that we've sorry, book two doesn't exist.
Yeah, not for Zach anyway. Okay, I think I can buy that. That fits well for me. You could see that kind of like a Gandalf thing, being part of the Fellowship and then coming back after being killed.
Increased power
and bought the white.
Okay, for a Temptress, God, this is gonna hit so many points. It's so hard to do this sometimes when I'm a bigger proponent of like the hero's journey and stories. Because I think this betrayal and the temptation to just kind of give up is very real. It's relevant even when Cobb is trying to tell her, like, hey, I could get you in with a flight crew, not one of the DFF people, but just like flying. And she's like, no, yeah. I can't anymore. So that's...
I'm a monster!
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting because we see lots of things that affect her emotionally, arguably the death of her crewmates and lots of stuff. But this, more so than anything, is kind of world shattering, right? Because she talks about in several instances how she kind of built herself on this foundation, and that her father wasn't a coward, and therefore she also was not a coward. But if that meant he was, does that mean she is, sort of thing?
I really agree.
But I know it's an aside, but I thought that was kind of neat. Books that could be deemed young adult, the friends are always kind of like, let's distract you and do something else, sort of thing. But Rick was good enough friends and long enough friends with her that he just said, no, whenever you're ready.
Going on to our Atonement with the Creator, this one I don't enjoy as much. I understand why we picked Ironsides here, but I don't view her as a creator as much. She doesn't, I think, interact with Spin enough, like one-on-one, to have that same creator feel. She doesn't have enough of a direct connection to Spin.
See,
connections she's to the father.
I very adamantly disagree in that I think besides her father or her direct family members, that perhaps has a greater influence on who Spin is Cobb, and that I don't even think is as much as Iron.
Isn't there a moment where Spin is down and talking to her grandmother about seeing the eyes? And
yes, there is a moment where she.
But that's that. I feel like that links back to our wider multi-book arc in the terms of repairing her family name and becoming a pilot. Ironsides, right, there's a comment at the very towards the beginning, and even though we find out the political situation is more complicated, that Ironsides is both the head of the faction that is trying to keep Spin repressed and also functionally the head of government on her own, and she is a personal vendetta against Spin, right? There's constant comments about how Ironsides, if it wouldn't just look so badly on the goddamn admiral, like straight up bitch slapping a student, would have thrown her bodily back into the elevator the moment she tried to step on the surface. So she's both quite the person responsible for Spence's situation in blacklisting her family, forcing them down into poverty, and also personally responsible for that.
Okay, I mean, I didn't think I was going to win this, but I felt like I had to point out that stuff.
There are some weaknesses to it, but ultimately it is the person responsible for her situation and her coming to some sort of catharsis together, even as Ironsides is worried that Spin is going to betray them all.
Now, to be fair to Ironsides...
Nope.
No, to be fair to Adam, I don't know if I would act differently. If I was in this example and I just saw the person who I used to advocate for extremely come back from being out in space, all of a sudden had their flip switched and completely murder all my other friends after I'd so staunchly defended them, I wouldn't want their daughter going out and trying to be a pilot. Other people killed who I'm directly responsible for. She's meant to be this bad guy.
Sins of the father, Zach. Sins of the father.
No, it's logical.
I mean,
she's supposed to be the kind of bad guy, but everything
shoving the child into, well, having a honest and logical. Yes, declare your husband a coward rather than tell the truth. Commit to the government cover-up rather than argue for the truth. You're arguing for the totalitarians. It's not.
I'm not saying it's the right thing. I'm not saying it's the morally right thing. I'm saying it's objectively the right thing. In this,
look, there's a reason that Ironsides is not in the second book for some reason.
Yes. Who knows what that reason is? Going on to our apotheosis, I like the Cytonic hyperdrive moment because that's been something brought up kind of subtly throughout the whole book. Not terribly subtly, but brought up throughout the whole book that it's missing. It's important to Ambot and the ship. So I think it's a very nice moment and but the realization what, that the...
What I was going to say is, do you know what's bad? Is that it's brought up all the time. And even when we find out that her grandmother was the hyperdrive, my thought was still, oh, so there must be two hyperdrive technologies, right? See, that like there must, because they talk about the box shaped missing hole. I was expecting her to jump them away the way that it happened, but I wasn't expecting it to be in conjunction with Mbot, if that makes any sense. I was still caught off guard a little bit by the Cytonic hyperdrive in place.
Oh, see, I completely saw it as a Dune-like thing where the system is capable, but you would never actually be able to do it without someone who could do the, could see beyond, you know.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be the people who could see.
Assumed originally the first time that they say the grandmother was the heart of the engines, but with that final conversation, or great-grandmother, when they have the final conversation with the grandmother, though, where she goes, no, my mother was the engine. Then I was like, okay, so it, like, right, clearly the like modified human hyperdrives are the more advanced thing, and Mbot must have had like some older computer system hyper jump system installed. Yeah. All of that is irrelevant. I just thought it was once again a display of how good the writing can be here, that even with people like us who read these books all the goddamn time, little bits still get to catch us by surprise.
Yeah, and a completely another relevant bit that I will almost assumedly surely cut out. There was a super one-off funny kind of thing where in the whole book all they talk about is the men, how tall people are in centimeters and all that shit. And then he's talking about the altimeter, which is the device.
Which is in feet. And why the fuck is it in feet?
Yeah. Why the fuck is it in feet? And it was hysterical.
Because it's true.
Well, it's in America, we use feet in all aspects of aviation still. Even though other countries use meters for like their runway lengths and stuff. But
they still, for their altimeters, they still use feet.
They
right?
still use feet for their altimeters in Europe and shit.
And then I think we can all agree that the ultimate boon is very boony.
Yes. Big boon. Big boon energy. BBE.
I hate it. Thank you. Cast blood brain elves. Anyway, cascade into a slightly smaller nuclear bomb. Also, I'm still not sure if they were nukes or if it's meant to be like...
they're definitely a bioweapon.
Yeah, It was like the old rumored bioweapon where it was like you could drop it on a city and all the buildings would be fine and you just have black outlines of all the people.
Yeah, it seemed like it was some sort of... The three shocks, and the second shock was the penetrating one to let the gas in. And the first one was penetrating, second was smoke, and third was get the smoke where you want.
Yeah.
Push it forward again. That is going to bring us to a close on a perfect initiation. Alex, what is going on this week?
I don't know. My heart just must not be into it.
Oh, you just
What's
love
funny
it.
Is when I read this story, I was kind of like, I don't know. You know, but
I'm well, in fairness, without a little bit of help, you might have lost. No,
that's not the point.
Drifting through the nothing and back into normal space, we come to the last 12 pages of the book, or as they're more commonly known, the return.
Yeah, for a refusal of the return, we start off with the understanding that she is hyperdrive to another part of the planet. She is outside the, I think it was 100 kilometers or something like that. And so while she was out of the range of the explosion, and safe and in communication with Alta and Admiral Ironsides, they, you're a hero, come back for your hero's welcome. And she sees that hole in the debris surrounding the planet, and she gets that call just like her father did. And she says, well, I've got no blasters, so if I come back crazy, you should have no problem taking me down. And she shuts off her comms and heads out into space. So pretty much can't ask for a better refusal of return. And good thing she does refuse this return, because they would have been operating with a lot less information. The magical into space through that debris hole and finding herself in the vast nothingness of space, which is different than the nothingness that she describes slightly later, which is the time in between heartbeats. But that is her magical flight in this spaceship out into a place that humans haven't been in three generations. Our rescue from without is when she finally gets to interacting with the Krell, aka the alien civilization, even though it's a little more in-depth than that. They try to do the same brainwashing on her that they did on her father. And M-Bot is able to close systems and stop them from affecting her and keeping her sane, which is a quality rescue. For the crossing of the return threshold, we have her making their way back to the debris, back to civilization. For the Master of Two Worlds, she has now showcased that she has all the piloting skills, both earned and inherent, and that she has restored her father's legacy and her family's legacy amongst the remainder of humans. But unfortunately, with her freedom to live, now that she understands that humans on this planet are simply kept in a jail of their own pseudo-design by this intergalactic federation of aliens, she has a lot of information, and she's ready to Sun Tzu their way off this planet.
Going to our refusal of the return. Wanted to take on the aliens. I mean, damn, that's a strong refusal. You know, just can't even accept this win. Got to go have a bigger win.
And right, it's got that she's doing the exact same thing that her dad did. She's running all the same risks. They'd won the day. It'd be so much safer for her better for her, and in theory, everyone, since she now knows that she can hyper jump to just fly back down to base. But she's got to go for it.
It is interesting to me that. Yeah, it is interesting. Most of the refusals are refusing to believe that you've won, and her refusal is wanting to go win harder.
I mean, it is arguably selfish, because if she does come back, not only is she denying them, you know, her inherent ability, which assumingly other people possess, since the fact that the Krell have been looking for, you know, the
there
best pilots.
There might be others, but no one is currently.
No one has been revealed in this. Yes. And she's taken away that, like, even if she never comes back, she's taken away their, like, most advanced tech that they're going to study and reverse transformer it. So.
Yeah, but it is ultimately part of. She's cleared her father's. She's redeemed her father, but this is. Right, she refuses to accept that is enough. She wants the truth.
Going on to our magical flight, going to space. I mean, we just had someone a hyper jump through nowhere into a different area. Really flying to space in the ship that she's been flying in.
No one has been to space.
You
they
can
talk
make the satanic hyper
like,
jump.
We talk
but,
about
yeah.
like they talk about space like. Old cultures talked about like heaven and hell. It's like a
they
thing
all,
that's out there, but we don't.
They all fly spaceships, but none of them have ever been to space except for her father. So it is. She's going through. She can see the stars. She's flying through a magical hole in the sky, past the detritus layers, and going into space for the first time ever.
Rescue from without. I think this is it. Like, it's fine. And by protecting her from the alien mind control, it saves her from essentially being what her father was. And it doesn't only save her from the alien mind control, but it also saves her father's reputation fully. Because now she can come back and say he was attacking what he thought were aliens that had killed everybody. He definitely wasn't a coward. He wasn't betraying.
He was a mind-controlled slave.
Yeah. For crossing the return threshold, I mean, this classic. Coming back, sharing all the information that she has about the world out there and what she can do, and preparing to share all these gifts with the people to help them. Live Better Lie. Master of Two Worlds is the first one I'm going to argue against. Not because I don't think there is one, but because I think Zax is just incorrect.
I don't even think there is one. She's kind of single dimension in what her journey is about. What do you think the other world is?
So she's the Cytonic pilot, but she's also becoming a friend and part of society. Before, she had just been a loner, unable to form a relationship, but through this, she's developed relationships with Jorgen, Rig, FM.
Does she kiss Jorgen in this book?
No.
Then no. I think that she's on her way, but I don't think the spin at the end of this book could be by any means said to have even mastered her friendships with the people in her, right? She's grown a lot closer to them, but she is still the outsider of their group.
And she gets a couple interesting, like the very, very end when she's sitting in the admiral's seat, she gets a couple of nice, no, not until I'm ready and my needs are met sort of thing. But I think that's more of a temporary, deferment given to her by these people assembled because of what happened, and less of something I believe probably will be permanent.
Either way, not awarding the point.
All right. And definitely no freedom to live, right? Like,
no, there's no freedom. But again, I did just want to make it clear that she could leave. It's not a freedom to live because she's trapped on the planet. It's a freedom to live because she's trapped in a book series. And that is going to close out on our return with those final 2 points missing of the Master of Two Worlds and the Freedom to Live. And that is going to put Spin at 14 out of 17. It is quite amazing to me how our threshold is 11, and yet all of a sudden, like, point and lots of people hit that, and yet getting up to 14 or higher puts you in a very different level of, man, did this book follow the journey real well? Spin is very intentionally written as an odd hero, and it comes across. But she is ultimately very, very much a modern hero. Closing thoughts. I'm in a bit of a pickle, dear listeners, because I liked this one so much that I, within the moment of finishing the last page, opened the next page of the first page of the second book, because we were already going to be doing these back to back in weeks, and I have no self-control. Spoiler free, this book is amazing. I love Sanderson's work. It was great. I find the characters compelling. I found the world really interesting, as has come across throughout this episode. It stayed on formula in a way that was satisfying while also having good twists, right? It wasn't just changing shit for the sake of changing it. Things worked and played together and met expectations while at the same time being different than I was thinking they would be.
Yeah, I, very similar to Jack, I've read this book before. This is my second time going back and reading it. Now in preparation for Cytonic coming out in just about 2 weeks. And I cannot wait for it. I love the world that's being built. Not as much as the Cosmere, I'll say, but I'm very excited for Zach to get a little more off-world and see if he actually doesn't like sci-fi with fantasy elements, or if that's just a weird thing that he's decided that he has.
Yeah, and I enjoyed this book. Kind of, I'm sure every author is different. I don't know the kind of research that Sanderson does for each novel outside of his own imagination, but either he's gotten his private pilot's license before enough to include these funny jokes, or he sat down with enough military pilots to develop some of his jokes, because one of the funniest things that your average reader, I don't think, would actually get across is that in one of the final chapters, when he's crashing the ship that Spin chooses not to evacuate from, the plane actually enters into a spin, and I just thought that was hysterical. And she did all the things in a normal plane that you're supposed to do to get out of the spin. Good on Sanderson. It was a fun read for sure. And the question becomes, how Star Wars-y do the future books get? You know, and I kept looking for ways for this book to be part of the Cosmere effortlessly, but I think he is very intentionally kept those parts of his work separate.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoy Hero's Journey as much as we love doing it, don't forget to leave us a review wherever you get your podcast from. It really helps us out. As always, I have been your host and judge, Jack.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
And join us next week as we are right back here doing Starsight, the second book in this very wonderful series.
Yay!
Oh, thank you.
One of our longer ones. I could just do a one that says, tough girl gets into flight school and does good stuff.
Yeah, but then you might be describing like an ex-roommate or something.
That's a funny joke if you've read the book.
God, please have read the book if you're listening to this. Or if you haven't, hi, Mom. This is a brief note for all listeners that Doomslug is the best character in this book.
Doom,
we didn't get a
chance
to talk about them, but right, they are an adorable little slug creature that loves Embot and Spin.
Could we go back and make Doomslug the higher power?
Doomslug the higher power.
No, Alex.
I kind of expected her to eat the slug as soon as it showed up, or the slug to have some sort of like mind mental thing, but anyway.
Yeah. Who knows? All right.
AKA flight partner. It's kind of like Top Gun. Just think of it like that. Goose and what's his name?
Maverick.
Main guy. Maverick, yeah.
Maverick.
I haven't watched that movie in so long.
I've never seen that movie.
The head of the school at my school is an old Top Gun pilot, and he says at Top Gun they have like a jar that you have to put $5 in every time you make a Top Gun movie.
Are they not allowed to play volleyball?
I don't know. They're just not allowed to play volleyball or wear sunglasses, aviator sunglasses. Or anyway. And Cobb provides lots of different things to Spin over the course.